Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you. With 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Welcome, Red Sox fans. Here are the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome, everyone. The Bastards are back for this Hot Take Tuesday edition of the podcast. It's the first time we've done it on these platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. As always, we're downloaded in over 30 countries across the globe on every major media platform. For everyone listening on Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the show if you have not already. Nothing you do will help us more immensely. A disclaimer for any first-time listeners, this is not a homer podcast. We call it how we see it. When the Red Sox are dominating, we will celebrate that. When they are getting destroyed, we will be critical and at times savagely blunt. If you are easily offended, hit the stop button immediately. But for those who embrace it, let's get rolling. Again, Hot Take Tuesday, Jason Kelly, Charlie Smith joining us for this episode. If you want to participate, you can find the thread on our Twitter account at Bastards_Boston, or you can email the podcast at bastardsofboston, all one word, bastardsofboston@gmail.com, and we will read and react to your hot take as we're about to do with several other people. So gonna be fun. We used to do this on YouTube, but decided to move it over to these platforms. So Jason, Charlie, you guys ready?
I'm ready to go.
Let's do this.
All right. A little early in the game, to be talking about this, but we'll take a quick stab at it. Flow Boss Theory on Twitter says to us, the Red Sox won't make any significant trades. They will, however, trade to slightly upgrade the bullpen or add a defensive center fielder. Any thoughts on what we might do? Or will we make a bigger acquisition, do you think?
So I actually agree with that. Because Kai and Bloom's your GM. So what do you expect him to do? Do you really think that this guy who has done nothing but try to stockpile young players and try to improve that farm system, do you think he's going to trade away a bunch of young players for a rental or, you know, a veteran like that? The only way I could see us making a big move is if it's a veteran player who drastically improves your lineup or your rotation, who also has term left on his contract. I don't think Kyan Bloom is a rental kind of guy, at least not for this kind of team, which is, let's face it, kind of a fringe playoff team. You know, they're not a top contender. They're not a World Series favorite. They're probably a wild card team. So I just don't see him trading away young prospects to add anyone who, you know, could maybe get us a few more wins. I don't see that. Now, for a bullpen arm, sure, absolutely. I think he'll make deals to help the bullpen or maybe even supplement the rotation a little bit. But as far as a big name player, no, I don't see that either.
I'm with Jason on this one. 5 years ago, I would have said, yeah, sure, they'll go out and get Max Scherzer, but we're 5 years too late on that party, and he's got no time left on that contract. We already know what Chaim Bloom is. He's someone who's going to be, you know, penny pinching, not going out and spending big bucks on players. And let's be honest, the Red Sox are lucky to be where they are right now. They have a good team, but real talk, they are not the Dodgers or the Padres. And come August, September, I think you're going to see those teams right the ship and figure out whatever issues that they have. The Red Sox still, pound for pound, cannot match up to those teams. So I don't see any major changes coming.
We do have some guys down on the farm. Anthony Bizzardo, who we mentioned in the last episode, could come up. He could probably get you more than three outs when needed. And if we could just get a guy like Darwin's in to step up and be solid, maybe that's not an area that we're worried about. And honestly, I don't know how it's going to shake out, but I agree with you guys. It's not going to be a big splash. If either Hauk or Seabold come back from their elbow issues with no setbacks and they're going to be good to go in the second half, I think that takes us out of the running for a starting pitcher as well. So if fans are looking for a blockbuster move, I don't think this is the year for it, unfortunately. Beantown underscore Titletown on Twitter says, Xander, JD, and Rafi will all be in the MVP discussion if they keep playing the way that they are. So let's frame it this way. Let's take that take, and which one of the three is the most likely to either win the MVP or finish the highest out of those three players? Jason, who do you
Devers.
Think? Oh, Devers, Charlie?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to go. Sorry, Jason. I don't mean to jump the gun here, but I think Devers, and it's similar to somebody that we talked about on a show earlier. This is the guy who people are comparing to David Ortiz, and it's not just us. It's a lot of other people that are you know, comparing his makeup. I give Devers the edge over Martinez because Devers isn't the DH, so he plays positions. With Xander Bogaerts, I don't expect Xander Bogaerts to mash 30-plus home runs and hit 110 RBIs and do the things that Rafi Devers is going to do. Xander Bogaerts will have a higher batting average. There's no question there. But I think for what you're getting and the fact that people typically don't want to give the MVPs to the older guys, the guys that have been around for a little while longer, they want to give it to the younger ones. I think Devers has the edge here.
Jason, who do you think it'll be?
I actually think it'll be Bogaerts. This sort of reminds me of 06 when Ortiz got robbed of his MVP by Justin Morneau. Ortiz hit, I think, 54 bombs that year or something like that. I think Rafael Devers is on pace to have a really good power year, but I think Xander Bogaerts will have the better body of work in general. I think that he'll walk more. I think he'll get on base more. I think his defense will be a little bit better. They both play the field, but let's face it, Rafael Devers, every time he throws to first base, your heart is in your throat because it's you know, skipping in the dirt. And I think he's going to end up with more errors. I think Devers will hit more home runs, but I do think that Bogaerts is on pace to have just an all around killer year. He's going to, you know, he's going to be tops of the league in batting average, maybe even top five. He's going to get on base a lot. he's probably going to play more games than Devers. And, it, you know, they might be close by the end of the year, but I just feel like Bogaerts is a little bit more durable. I could see Devers coming up with some sort of injury and missing 2-3 weeks, maybe. I don't see that with Bogaerts. So Devers will hit more power, but I think Bogaerts will have the better overall year. And I think Martinez just not playing in the field. And I do think he's going to slow down at some point. I don't think that this pace is going to keep up. You know, the power will be there, but I could see his average dipping down below what Bogaerts and Devers are going to do. So for that reason, I'm going with Xander. I think he's the most likely to do it.
I said at the start of the season that I expected Devers to lead the Red Sox in most of those major categories. That was my preseason prediction. Xander's off the charts right now, and we'll get to that in just a minute. Let me throw this angle in there a little. With Martinez, DHs don't win MVPs. It just doesn't happen. There's a bias there. They just don't go for that. The MLB writers, the Baseball Writers Association of America, I guess is who it is. And Martinez has been playing the field. And Mate had an outfield assist today, gunned down Shohei Ohtani at the plate from pretty far out in left field, had a good arm, made a diving catch the other night. He's played, I don't know, 6 or 8 games out there. What if he ends up playing 40 or 50 games overall in the outfield? And then these numbers do keep up for the most part. Does 40 or 50 games in the field get him to an MVP? Or do you need more?
You're then comparing 40 to 50 games as someone who's got 150 games. I still think you got to give it to the position players, whether you go with Jason, which I completely see his standpoint. It's not wrong. It's very valid. Or if you're leaning with Devers, they're still going to be playing, based on your guesstimate, close to 3 times, if not more, games in the field. And that is something that matters. You can only do so much as a DH because David Ortiz got robbed more than once. And, you know, I think of the other year when I think A-Rod beat him out. And we all know what A-Rod was. A fraud, a cheat. Well, so even if his level kind of declines a little bit, because let's be honest, what we saw so far has been through the roof. I still give it to Devers and, to Jason's point, to Bogaerts. Martinez is third in that list.
Well, his offensive numbers would have to be off the charts. He would have to have kind of a historic year, because other than that, I mean, the question's completely invalid. But I was just trying to make an easier path for him. And if he ends up out there for 40 or 50 games, I just don't know if that makes it an easier case to make. But like I says, he has to be off the charts regardless. Our good buddy, oh no, I'm skipping one. Just Dingers on Twitter says Xander Bogaerts is the best shortstop in MLB. And he happens to be right. Trey Turner is second on that list, but Bogaerts ties him in number of home runs at 9, has 6 more RBIs than Turner, 5 more doubles. Bogaerts has 13 on the season, and in fact, he leads the league in shortstops, I should say, with 13. And appears to have the most hits as well. So he's leading in so many categories right now. And when you talk about him having, you know, the bigger MVP year over Devers, Bogaerts is hitting .344 right now with an on-base percentage of .404. The on-base percentage, I mean, how many guys at the end of the year are above that? I think just Mike Trout by the end of the year. So this is where Jason made the case that it's more likely to be Bogaerts. And these numbers are why. So absolutely the best. Either of you,
yeah, go ahead. I would agree. Yeah, I think that, you know, guys like Trevor Story and Bo Bichette are going to have the bigger power numbers than Bogarts, but he's just got everything. He's got the defense to go along with it. He does get on base, you know, at a much higher clip. I think Trey Turner is pretty good at getting on base too, but he doesn't, you know, I don't think the power numbers by the end of the year will match up. I think Bogarts will pass him. I just think he's the best all-around shortstop in the game right now. I'm not sure who else you could put up next to him, you know, and there's a lot of good shortstops right now. Like I mentioned, it's Story, Bichette, Javi Baez is still hanging around. Like, you know, Willy Adames in Tampa Bay is making great strides, but I just think that Bogarts, with the power, the ability to get on base, the defense, and just the fact that he can hit at like a high clip. I mean, he's probably going to have over 200 hits this year. I'm not sure any other shortstop in the major leagues is going to come close to that.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Barring injury, we're also forgetting about Fernando Tatis Jr. And that's a name that isn't getting a lot of love this year. But, I mean, he's had two-thirds the number of at-bats because of injury, and that's part of the game. He's had the same number of home runs as Xander Bogaerts. That's the thing. And they've scored, I think, the same amount of runs. The hits, obviously, Bogaerts is leading by a long shot because batting average is over 350. I think Xander Bogaerts is the best American League shortstop by far. A case can be made overall shortstop. I might still probably give the edge to Bogaerts, but offensively, nope. Second best shortstop. Fernando Tatis is a better hitting shortstop than him. A little bit younger, too. But the original question was, we have the best shortstop right now? Yeah. Right now because of injury? Yeah, we do.
Yeah, we absolutely do. Next, our good buddy, Zach Tabak. He had a few. I just went with one of them. But he says, Phillips Valdez is the most underrated player on the Red Sox. I'll say with today's scoreless performance, his ERA has dipped to
2.93. I'm not sure I'm willing to give him the title of most underrated. He's been surprisingly good. We already saw Austin Bryce fall apart. He's a complete mess. He's probably done pretty soon. I was kind of expecting Valdez to fall apart as well. He hasn't so far. And he's making peanuts. I mean, if you want to, you know, bring it to money, Valdez is making, I think, nothing, you know, and I say nothing, you know, compared to everyone else on this team. I still think for me, most underrated would be Hunter Renfroe. And I wouldn't have said that the first couple of weeks of April, but he's brought the average back up to, I think he's around 230 now, 235. He's starting to hit for power, and he plays a great right field. He's so good every time he's out in the outfield. He's great defensively, and you're paying him almost nothing. You're only paying him, what, $3 million? I mean, you're getting more out of Hunter Renfroe than, you know, the Brewers are out of Jackie Bradley Jr., who made another catch that wasn't a home run that, you know, everyone said was he robbed a home run. He really didn't. It was going to be a double if he didn't leap up unnecessarily like he always did here in Boston. But Renfroe is just as good defensively as Jackie was. I have no problem saying that. I think I've always said Bradley's overrated. He's getting paid $14 million out there in Milwaukee. You're paying Hunter Renfroe $3 million. He's hitting for power. The average is going up. And he plays great defense. He's got a killer arm, too. I think he's the most underrated. Valdez is close. Zach makes a great point. Valdez has been really solid. But for me, Renfroe plays almost every day. I was not expecting him to play every day. I expected him to be a platoon guy at most. And he's proving to be a reliable, solid, everyday player for, you know, less than $5 million. But can't go wrong with that.
I think a case can be made for either one. Beginning of the season, I would say absolutely not Hunter Renfroe. But Zach brings up a good point with Valdez. He's only pitched in 12 games this year. He's only had three blemishes in the 12, and none of the blemishes have been absolutely devastating. He's 1-0. He hasn't blown a game. He hasn't lost a game. He hasn't registered any holds. He's striking out one an inning. His whip is under one, and he's getting better with time. I think Valdez, you know, both are doing better, but here's the thing. Valdez was doing well in the cold and the hot. You're going to see Hunter Renfroe light up in the summer months. Valdez has been doing well so far, regardless of weather. Now, I think once the summer months kick in, I think that'll switch to Renfroe. I do, however, think it will switch back to someone like Valdez once it starts to get back to being cold again, because balls fly out of Fenway a little bit easier when the weather is a little bit nicer.
I think with Renfroe, and it's fair to say he's underrated, but the announcers are all over it when he has an outfield assist. You know, it gets raved about. You see the clips spread out all across social media. Valdez doesn't get a ton of credit at all. So he flies under the radar, and I guess I'm a little bit more sympathetic to him. For whatever reason, though, and we've covered this in previous shows, Alex Cora doesn't like to go to him too often. He gave up one run on May 6th, another run on April 24th. So those are the two last times he's given up runs, and we're coming up here on May 20th. So he's been quietly very, very kind of reliable, I guess, is the best word, out of the pen, even though it hasn't quite been in high leverage. So he's a guy I want to see more. And with Andres not pitching well and Ottavino walking the tightrope, I think we might see him a little bit more. Jack on Twitter says, Chris Sale will be the setup man / closer down the stretch. Says Jack on Twitter. So, Jason, go ahead.
Part of me doesn't hate this entirely, only because I also I've not been of the idea that like Chris Sale's going to come back and be at the front of your rotation and give you, you know, 6-7 innings or even 5-6 innings every start from like August through the end of the year. I think that's incredibly optimistic and quite frankly very lofty. And I think Chris Sale is one of those guys that he recognizes what the deal is, you know, and if the Red Sox are contending and the rotation is still going well, that's a big if the rotation is still intact, where it's Rodriguez at the front, Evaldi figures his stuff out, it's Perez, Pivetta, you know, everyone's going good, then I could see Chris Sale saying, you know what, you guys have had, you know, especially if they're still having problems in the eighth inning by then, which hopefully they're not, right? Hopefully if they're contending, they're not still searching for an eighth inning guy. But if they are, I could see Chris Sale going, you know what, I'm working my way back, the team's contending. If this is the best spot for me, I'll do it. I'll be your eighth inning guy. I'll be like your left-handed Garrett Whitlock, where every couple of outings I'm going 3 or 4 innings. But then if you need me to just pitch one, I'll do one inning. I'll do one inning in a close game in a tight spot. I'll do it. So I don't abhor the idea, but you know, ultimately, if he can come back as a starter, that's what you want, right? That's like priority number one. Get him back in the rotation. That's where he's at his greatest value. But if he's not ready for that, if he can't pitch 5-6 innings and you're worried about his health, and again, if everything's going good, the rotation's going good, put him in the 7th-8th inning, you know, make him the next Garrett Whitlock. I have no problem with that whatsoever.
I'm struggling with it. I mean, I know that we had an issue with before the season started, Nate Evaldi is a long reliever. I remember giving Terry garbage for that, thinking this is so stupid. And we had the conversation about how much money you know, we were going to be investing into a reliever. Dodgers have how much money invested into David Price? I mean, we're paying for it too, but he's coming out of the bullpen for a lot of his appearances and whatnot. I don't know if I like it. I think Chris Sale, for the fact that he's a grinder, he's a gamer, he's nothing short of hardcore. This guy's going to want to come out and pitch 7, 8, 9 times to finish out the year. I'd be pretty happy if he gets 55, 60 innings of work for the season. You know, I don't expect him to not get thumped at least once. I got to say it again. I'm happy. It is what it is. I just think that it's not necessarily going to be the best use of Chris Sale if he's pitching in the 7th or 8th inning. If he was to do a potential long relief every 4th day, I would be possibly, maybe you could convince me of that. But I just feel like once Chris Sale comes back into the rotation, you got Sale, you got your boy Pivetta. Maybe Erod kind of figures it out. Martin Perez also. I mean, it could be decently formidable, not scary, but formidable. So I don't know if I love that one too much, but it's something to think about.
Well, here's the problem. His estimated time of arrival back at Fenway Park seems to be early July at this point. He's throwing off a mound, which also means he's throwing at high velocity. I don't know if it's max velocity, but he's throwing hard if he's on the mound. So if he was going to be in the bullpen pitching down the stretch, that probably meant he had a setback or he came back and just was rusty and couldn't find it. That would be the scenario of which Chris Sale would just be pitching one inning a game. So I just very much expect he's going to stay in the rotation either way. And can you guys imagine the hype train a couple weeks out? Chris Sale's finally coming back. That's going to be like a king returning to the palace. Like, tons of hype, tons of coverage, a lot of anticipation. So I don't see him being utilized much differently. David Price with the Red Sox in 2017 was, but his timetable was far later into the season. So he just didn't have time to get ready. And if you ask him, he did have time, but John Farrell wouldn't let him or whatever. Whichever story you want to believe, but he pitched out of the bullpen that playoff. So Jack has an imagination, but I think very much he'll be a starter. Nface on Twitter says Danny Santana will be the Red Sox left fielder by June 15th, and Franchi Cordero will be sent to Worcester. Jason.
God, I hope so. I hope so. At least with Danny Santana, he's still largely an unknown in a Red Sox uniform, but at least he's had a full season of good production at least once in his career. What the hell has Franchi Cordero done? He's been given up on by 3 different teams before coming here. He came into the league as a shortstop. He sucked at shortstop. The Padres started to turn him into an outfielder. He never got it going. At least Santana has been kind of a versatile all around the place kind of player with Minnesota and with Texas, but he showed off that he can hit at least for 1 year. Granted, it was a couple of years ago, but still he had a full season of it. So I'll take the guy that has a full season of work to go off of and can play multiple positions than the guy who can only play the outfield, who looks like a joke out there every time he does, and can't hit. Literally looks like he can't hit, doesn't know how to play the game. So I'm all set. I'm all set with Cordero. Bring me Danny Santana, and if that doesn't work, then find a different alternative. Call up Jaron Duran or make a trade. I don't care what you do. But just, yeah, once Santana's ready, he's got to be up here. He's got to be playing in Cordero's spot every day because I can't do it with this guy anymore. I can't.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Jason on this one. This is something that I've been pretty vocal about with Branchy. Like, it's cute to see him get two bases in a month. Yes, he had a couple doubles, but it's exhausting. It's exhausting watching him play. It's not a fun feeling, too. I mean, when you go through one of those, like, 1-for-50 type stretches, man, oh, my God. If there's ever a manager in Major League Baseball that someone says, ah, yeah, find me a manager that has a lot of faith in a hitter, I'd be like, would any other manager have that much faith in a player if they were 1-for-52? The answer is absolutely not. I cannot wait for this chapter of 2021 to be over.
Santana, we haven't really talked about his stats very much on here. He hit 28 home runs in 2019. The most he ever hit prior to that one season with 28 was 7, his rookie year in 2014. The second highest he ever hit was 4 home runs in 2017. So he exploded in 2019. The balls were as juiced as they ever were that season. So I don't know really what to expect from him in the power department. He is a career 260 hitter with a 299 on-base percentage, so he's not going to draw a lot of walks. Is that an upgrade over Franchy Cordero, though? I think we can all agree it is. So he'll be the first one up. They'll definitely call him before Duran. I think it's going to be well before June 15th, Enface says. And it could conceivably be late this coming week or the week after. But I think, and Franchy could go. He could be the odd man out when Kike is ready, too. So he might leave much sooner than that, hopefully. So we'll see with Danny Santana. Next is a hot take from basically our longest tenured listener that I'm aware of, and his name is Scott George. He asks, what can we get in exchange for a Chaim Bloom trade? Prospects, probably a decent return. He wants to trade Chaim Bloom. He's his biggest hater, the president of the Fire Chaim Bloom fan club. So, anything?
Well, super thankful that you're a regular listener. I'm all for it, although I don't think there are going to be too many takers on a deal for something that's just not worth it. I'm trying to remain as diplomatic as possible because I know I'm not a huge fan, and people say, but the Red Sox keep winning. They keep doing great and whatnot. It's like, yeah, they have been. But am I going to be thanking Chaim Bloom for this exclusively? Absolutely not. The hitters still have to hit. And the pitchers still have to pitch. Chaim Bloom is not on the mound, and he's not in the batter's box. Some of these guys are doing some great work. Yes, some in part because of Bloom. But which ones of the players are making the biggest impact on the team? Pretty sure they were all here before Bloom. So maybe a bag of M&Ms and Chiclets with a six-pack of beer? Like, hopefully something good? I don't know. Jason?
So, do you guys remember the Theo Epstein trade? Do you remember what we got for Theo Epstein?
Oh, God. Here we go.
Oh, go ahead.
Do you remember?
The starting pitcher we had there, he had a really good 2012. I forget his name.
Well, so his name was Chris Carpenter.
Oh,
and
no.
It's not the Chris Carpenter that you're thinking of. Okay. It was not the guy who pitched really well for the Blue Jays and the Cardinals all those years. It was just kind of a middling guy who had a decent year in 2012, but that was it. And then they swapped a bunch of low-level minor leaguers, and that was it. That's all the Red Sox got for Theo effing Epstein, a guy who brought a World Series here. So if we're talking about trading Chaim Bloom is a nobody compared to Theo Epstein. He's, you know, I guess his report card so far here in 2021 is not a failing grade, because the Red Sox are in first place and they're contending, and guys that he acquired, moves he's made, it's worked out. But that's really all you can say for him. And again, like, general manager trades, in baseball, it doesn't generally work out. Like I said, the Theo Epstein trade, the Red Sox got basically a whole lot of nothing for that. So I think a Chaim Bloom trade, they would get similar. They would just get sort of, I don't know what team would even want Chaim Bloom. I don't know what team would desperately want Chaim Bloom so badly, but you would get a decent pitcher or a decent major league ready player, and then you'd get just a bunch of low-level prospects. It would actually probably look very similar to the Cordero-Andrew Benintendi trade, where you'd get a major league ready player, supposedly, although I think we can all agree now Cordero is not a major league player, but you get just a bunch of players to be named later. That's it. Like, you wouldn't get anything decent. So it's probably not worth them looking into.
Felix Dubront was the guy I was thinking of, but obviously not the correct answer. I'm not a Chaim Bloom guy. See, the audience, I've mentioned the group chat before, just kind of referred to it, because that's where we kind of all collaborate. And if they were to see that chat, they would be surprised at how annoyed I get with Chaim Bloom. I come on the podcast and I play it cool. But not a big Bloom guy so far. That could change later on. You don't see me posting fire Bloom hashtags on social media. I'm not that guy. But worst case scenario, if we miss the playoffs this year and then we miss the playoffs in 2022, he's going to have at least all of 2023 before he does get fired. That's the earliest. So for all the haters of Chaim Bloom out there, who I'm somewhat sympathetic with, realistically, 2023, he could get fired at the end of that. I don't think he will, because I just think the team's going to get better and better, and then people like me and Charlie will be forced to come around. But yeah, I'm not a big fan. The political innuendo of Chaim Bloom is what drives me the most nuts, the lack of transparency. So if anyone's wondering why, that's kind of what I get most annoyed with. So it would be a dumb return to answer the question. When we had to trade for John Farrell, who obviously was a manager, but we traded Mike Aviles to get John Farrell away from the Blue Jays. So yeah, which I was all for at the time, and then came to regret it deeply. So anyways, that will about do it for this week's Hot Take Tuesday. If you want to participate next week, again, the email is bastardsofboston, all one word, bastardsofboston@gmail.com, and hit us with it. And you can also give us feedback, send us hate mail as well on that account, whatever. We'll entertain anything. So find us there. And for the listening audience, we will be back to record on Thursday night, the regular show to cover the Blue Jays series, and that'll be available early Friday morning. Take care.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Saving money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards. Menards has a huge selection of concrete and mortar mixes. Our concrete products are great for a variety of applications, including pouring a walkway, setting a post, or even installing stone veneer. View our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening this week. Save